Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Stripe Tap to Pay on iPhone came along and changed everything. With Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. No more juggling different methods. Just a simple tap on my iPhone and transactions are complete. What's truly remarkable is how Stripe caters to all my customers' preferences. Whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets, Stripe ensures a smooth checkout experience every time. Setting up Stripe was a breeze, taking just minutes to get up and running. From local markets to global retailers, Stripe helped me expand my reach and grow my business with ease. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.
Welcome to DTNS Experiment Week. All this week, DTNS is on summer vacation, but in its place is Experiment Week, where our producers and contributors are trying out new show ideas and releasing them right here on the DTNS feed. Enjoy.
I'm Nicole Lee, and this is Perpetually Online, a show about life on the internet that includes memes, beefs, viral videos, and everything in between. My co-host today is Carissa Bell. Hello, Carissa.
Hello.
Hello. And just a little bit about ourselves. My name is Nicole, like I said, and I've been a tech journalist for almost 20 years now. But more than that, I'm always online. I was on Twitter like day dot, it seems like. And Carissa, why don't you tell us a little bit about what you do for a living and how you feel about being online all the time?
Well, I'm also a tech reporter, surprise, surprise. been doing it probably about at least 10 years at this point. Try not to think about it. I've spent most of that time covering social media, so I am also always online. Gotten a little bit better lately about trying to consciously unplug at certain times. But, it's basically my job to be online all the time.
Would you be online all the time if it wasn't your job?
I think I would.
Yeah.
It's hard to know because I started doing this, I want to say, around the time when Twitter started to get really big and social media as we know it now was kind of starting to blow up. And that was around the time I became a journalist. So the two have always been very intermixed for me. But yeah, I think I probably would anyway.
Yeah, it's interesting because when I first started using Twitter and, all the other social media stuff, that wasn't my job. I mean, I covered tech, but it was more in the, gadget space. It wasn't so much in the social media online space. But I just started using it just to use it, really. I think a lot, honestly, to be completely honest, the one of the reasons I was on all the social media things to begin with was just to reserve my name. It was just to book my name so that I would be Nicole or Nicole Lee or whatever, just to have my name parked and reserved so that no one else could use it, really. And that was my driving reason, my driving force to use all these things to begin with. But very, very similarly, that was one of my things. I think the reason why I wanted to do this podcast is because I feel very similarly, my life is so plugged in, not just Twitter, but Instagram, TikTok, I'm on these things all the time. And it seems like it's so dynamic, especially lately. And it seems like everything's changing all the time, not just in terms of the companies themselves changing, and we'll get to that today, but just in terms of the kind of news that breaks online only, the kind of trends and news events that emanate from TikTok. TikTok's such a huge trendsetter in this space too. It doesn't just change online, it doesn't just dictate our online lives, but like offline lives. It sort of trickles down to like every aspect of our lives, it seems. So yeah, let's just get started. Oh, by the way, I should say that this podcast is going to air on Daily Tech News Show's Experimental Week, and this podcast, if we're recording it on August 1st. Everything that comes out in this podcast might be old news by the time this podcast comes out on the week of August 14th. But just a little disclaimer there, just in case we're talking about like old news at this point. But we'll try to keep it as evergreen as possible in our discussions here. But this was recorded on August 1st, 2023. Okay, so the biggest newsmaker in the online space for the past week and possibly for the past year has been Twitter, specifically Elon Musk's Twitter. Ever since Musk purchased Twitter for $44 billion last April, it seems like Twitter HQ has been nothing but chaos. That is especially the case last week, as Musk has decided to rename the company to X. He even went so far as to place a giant metal X structure on the rooftop of 1355 Market Street, aka Twitter HQ. It's since been taken down after neighbor and city complaints, but the company's name remains unchanged, at least for now. Carissa, you wrote the initial story for Engadget about how they were renaming the Twitter to X. What the heck is happening?
Well, there's a few things. Yeah. You know, I think Musk has always kind of had this fascination or attachment to the letter X for whatever reason. Mm-hmm. You know, back in the late 90s when he first came up, had a banking startup that he later sold to PayPal. It was called X.com. He later bought that domain back from PayPal a few years ago before he got involved with Twitter.
That was only a few years ago, right?
Yeah, I want to say it was 2017.
Okay, relatively recent-ish.
Yeah, and you know, obviously Tesla has a Model X. One of sure. his children, he is named.
That's right.
Has a variation of the name X. He calls him Little X. You know, I forget how you actually say like X A E, whatever the official name is, but you know, they call him Little X. So
Musk Jr. X.
Yeah, so he, okay. You know, he has this personal thing for the letter. Mm-hmm. You know, I think more broadly speaking, this is kind of, he really wants to make sure that, like, this is his vision of what the company that used to be called Twitter is. It's no longer birds and tweets and Jack Dorsey and all that stuff. I think this is really him trying to create separation, saying, like, this is my company now. This is my vision for it. It's this future looking new brand. You know, the old Twitter has a lot of baggage. So I think he's trying to really make a statement with what he sees as the future of the company.
I think my question, so I think that's correct. I mean, that's, as you say, Musk has this obsession with X for a while now. But I think we can go on from that. It seems like he wants to, I mean, he's always had this obsession, not just with the letter X, but like having an app, like an X app, or like an app that does everything. Can you speak more as to like what that means? What does he mean by having an app that does everything?
Yeah, so that's one of the other things that he said, that when he, I mean, he said this very early on from when he acquired Twitter, that he thought this is kind of the first step in a vision for Twitter not just being a place where you can tweet and, you know, maybe find out about what's going on in the world, but this kind of everything app. And, you know, the kind of model for this is WeChat in China, okay. Which, you know, their WeChat is basically used for, you know, pretty much everything that you do in everyday life. It's, you know, it's social media. It's also payments, shopping, you know, booking appointments. You know, it's kind of every sort of, my understanding of it is that it's basically every kind of service or need that you would use day to day kind of all rolled into one. And I think Musk really thinks that Twitter can be a version of that, where it can be payments and banking and video streaming and creators and shopping. And I think he kind of has the similar vision. Whether he can actually accomplish that, I think, is something else. I think a lot of other companies have kind of tried to be an everything app. And I think it's very hard to do that outside of somewhere like China, where the internet is very tightly and centrally controlled. And that's part of why WeChat has been so successful there.
Is there, like, what do you think, like, is there even the, what's the closest equivalent there is to that in the US? I can't even think of anything that, I mean, maybe Facebook-ish, like, back in the day, but I can't, like, even now, like, I can't really think of something that is that close to that vision, you know?
I mean, honestly, yeah, it is Facebook, you know?
If it is Facebook, isn't it?
There's social network, there's shopping, you can pay people, you can message people, you can sell your couch to your neighbor.
It has
a dating service, which, you know, a lot of people forget. So, you know, Facebook has stuck its fingers in a lot of things. But even if you look at Facebook, where they've been had their success, it's not at doing everything. Yes, they have done a lot of things, but it's basically at doing one thing really well, which is, you know, kind of their core social networking features, which are very easy to monetize. And then all the other stuff is sort of around that. But
yeah,
we don't think of Facebook as a kind of WeChat equivalent. At least
not really. Well, Facebook is, there are a lot of other things under Facebook. I guess that's the kind of thing with Facebook. But calling it X, there have been some issues with that, I think we've mentioned already. But one of the things that was surprising, I mean, first of all, it was someone's username, and then they got someone, they were just like, it was just unceremoniously taken from them. The ex username. So that was that particular, I can't remember his name, like Jin Huang, I think is his name. I can't remember exactly. And then, so that happened, which is, I guess, per Musk's desire to change the name. And then also, like, I guess, legally speaking, the ex, it was owned by Facebook or something. Do you know anything about that?
Yeah, so it's the trademark. So X is a very kind of common name. It's used in a lot of different sort of used by a lot of different companies in various ways. And one thing that people pointed out very quickly was that Meta actually owns a trademark for X in the context of social networking. It's kind of unclear whether that Meta's kind of potential claim will actually be an issue for Twitter, because you know, the logos look kind of different. It doesn't seem like Meta's actually using that trademark right now. But at the same time, there are hundreds of other companies that do use some version X. And I think just the fact that it's now Twitter, it's Elon Musk, he's so high profile, you know, he's been involved in so many lawsuits. I think it just, what a lot of trademark attorneys say is, it just kind of opens you up to potential lawsuits, even if they're frivolous, and not credible. You know, companies may come out of the woodwork and try to sue X Corp now and see if they can, you know, get a settlement or, you know, get a piece of Twitter for it.
You know, it's interesting you mentioned, like, how Elon, he's always wanted this X app. He wants to change Twitter to X, and it that sounds as if there's been some forethought, but from where I'm sitting, it just seemed kind of ramshackle, put slapdash, because, you know, like, as we know, the X logo isn't really a logo. It's a Unicode, like, thing, like a Unicode character, I mean. And this whole structure that was put on the Twitter building doesn't seem to have any permits or nothing. Just, it just seemed kind of, even though, like, I totally understand he's had this, like, vision for a long time, but this whole decision to make it into an X just, on the surface, seemed like a very slapdash decision. And does that ring true to you at all? Or do you think this has been in the works for, like, a year?
I mean, it probably was. You know, this is kind of how Musk operates. He makes decisions on the fly. He doesn't necessarily consult with a lot of people. If he does consult with them, he doesn't necessarily listen to their advice.
Yeah.
You know, and let's not forget that Twitter was not in the greatest news cycle at the time. There's a lot of conversations about hate speech on Twitter and kind of the rise of this. There was some reporting out there that really upset Elon Musk and other executives at the company. And so, you know, what's a really great way to change the media narrative about your companies, like rename it X. You know, but I mean, yeah, he announced it. He started talking about this on a Saturday night.
Right.
You know, pretty late in the night while he was playing Diablo and joined the Twitter Spaces conversation and was like, yeah, I think I'm going to rename it X. So, yeah. I mean, yeah, but this is how he operates.
I mean, it sounds ridiculous because it is ridiculous, really. Like, so the other thing is that I read on Platformer, Casey Newton's Platformer, on how he posits that, you know, because this was the question I had all along, like, why did Elon Musk buy Twitter? Like, why did he buy it? Was it to make Twitter into the X, or was it something else? And Casey was saying that it was just kind of a thing he did to, like, make Twitter his own platform and kind of shut the quote-unquote liberals up and make it into his own playground. And that kind of seems to be what he did, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think, let's not forget, before he bought Twitter, he was Twitter's highest profile, most, you know, popular user by a lot of metrics. And a lot of people have made this point, but when you know, think about what happens when Elon Musk tweets. He instantly is getting millions and millions of people liking, retweeting, replying, telling him he's a genius, you know, instantly. And whatever random thought he has, whatever random meme he posts or stolen joke, he tweets like it's his own. Like, he gets a lot of instant gratification, a lot of feedback. So I think, you know, and this is the same loop, like, that we all kind of have with social media, but at that kind of scale, it's just so amplified. I think it's very easy to get kind of like wrapped up in your own presence. Like, have you ever had a tweet go like really viral and yes. you're just watching it like rack up retweets and replies?
I don't like
and it's
it.
Like, it's, yeah, but it's kind of addictive, right? Like, you can't
stop
waiting to like see like what people are saying and you're checking it. And it's like this weird dynamic. And like, if that happens every single time you tweet without fail, regardless of what you have to say and whether it's actually smart or actually funny, like, I can see how that becomes like a big part of your like
personality.
Yeah, exactly.
That's just yeah it's so crazy to me too that, you know, he bought it for, well, he bought it for $44 billion, but then he tried to like get out of it. That was his whole back and forth, I remember, on how like he was like, I don't really want to get it, or like there's this whole bunch of reasons of how, well, Twitter was lagging about his numbers, therefore, you know, I don't need to buy it anymore or something. But he ended up having to buy it anyway, and it's, I don't know, and we are where we are, I suppose. So Twitter being the state it is, that it is, the fact that, you know, it's now X, I guess. It's called X now. The logo has changed to X, and it changed its Twitter blue profile so that all the verified, there's no more such thing as like be actual verification. It's like you have to pay to be verified, right? Isn't that the case now?
Yeah.
You have to pay to be verified, you have to pay to have the blue check. So there's all these things, all these changes. And it kind of makes sense why people don't like Twitter anymore. There's this huge contingent of people who are like, you know what, Twitter, I just can't stand this anymore. And because of that, and as a result of that, well, there are lots of other reasons, but as a result of that, there are all these Twitter alternatives. I'm just going to name a few. I'm sure there's more, but these are the few that I can think of right now. The first and perhaps earliest one I can think of is Mastodon. And that's like a federation. We'll get to what federation means in a little bit. That's Mastodon. It's like a federation thing. And then there's Blue Sky, which is another kind of a federation thing. Not quite the same, but ish, similar. And then the most recent entrance into the Twitter alternative game is Threads. And Threads is part of Instagram/Meta. I'm not really sure which umbrella that falls under, but it seems to be sort of Instagram-ish in its execution, at least. And then I'm sure there's others that exist or will exist in the coming future. But I think the first question that comes, well, firstly, I think we should address, let's go through them. So Mastodon, and that operates in a Fediverse, like a federation type thing. And from what I understand, you can correct me if I'm wrong here, but like it operates in the way like email would operate. So like you have your own server that you would join, like mastodon.social or mastodon.xyz or whatever. And then you have your username on there. But it's a little complicated to me. So why don't you explain what Mastodon is and what the whole federation thing is?
So Mastodon is a decentralized platform
yeah.
that runs on a protocol, an open source protocol called ActivityPub.
Yeah.
And there's a whole collection of services that run on ActivityPub, and that's that sort of collection is what's kind of known as the Fediverse. Mastodon is definitely the highest profile, the one with the most users that's in the Fediverse. And it's sort of a, you know, very Twitter-like service where you can, you know, post and reply to people and have, you know, follow, and it kind of looks similar. If you just, you know, look at the feed, it, you know, has kind of a similar interface to Twitter in mm-hmm. some ways. Mm-hmm. What's interesting about the Fediverse is that because it's decentralized, it's not controlled by one company. So like the standards, the moderation policies are sort of up to whoever's controlling the server.
Yeah.
And then also, one of the benefits of being in the Fediverse is that because it's on ActivityPub, any other service that also uses that protocol has interoperability. So you can kind of see their posts, share content, kind of interact across, you know, this loose sort of network
mm-hmm.
of services. So that's kind of the, you know, core difference between something like Twitter or other kind of like centrally controlled platform is that, you know, no one company actually is centrally controlling the whole service. It's only at mm-hmm. the server level.
I've heard it compared to email. And the reason why I say that is because like email itself is a protocol, but like a Gmail, it's like someone with a Gmail address can still talk to someone with a Hotmail address, can still talk to someone with a Yahoo address. They can still all talk to each other, even though they're used different email servers, but it's still just email. And the same thing with Mastodon, I guess, the protocol in specific, ActivityPub, I mean, in the sense of like, it doesn't matter which server you're on or which server you use, you can still talk to each other on the same sort of platform. And the interesting thing to me with Mastodon being one of the main sort of people, main companies or organizations using the ActivityPub protocol is that Threads, I think, as we mentioned, also uses the ActivityPub protocol. Is that correct?
So it doesn't right now.
But they said
when they launched Threads, they intend to support ActivityPub. And I agree. I think that's like one of the most interesting things about it is that they say that they want people to be able to take their audience on Threads to another server. They want developers to be able to build their own sort of experiences that will work with Threads and sort of like embracing this vision of like federated, decentralized social media. I think we still have a lot of questions about exactly how they're going to implement this and when it will happen. But it's really interesting to see from a company like Meta, which, you know, is all about centrally controlled platforms with a lot of restrictions.
Well, that's definitely correct. I think it's very interesting in the sense of like the fact that you could theoretically sort of swap your Threads account to like, I don't know, another Mastodon account theoretically, and it should all kind of port over, at least theoretically anyway, and your followers would be the same, or your following account should theoretically be the same. But I think some of the issues with that, and I've heard this from various people speaking, is that they're concerned that with this federation model, moderation kind of gets de-emphasized in the sense of like it's harder to like you might say that the idea of moderating from a trust and safety perspective might not be as much of a priority or something, or maybe they're saying like, oh, because they have this federated model, they leave it up to you. They leave it up to users to moderate, whereas that might not always be a good thing to leave it up to the users to moderate. So what do you think? Where What do you think of that in general, like the whole moderation argument?
I think it's definitely probably one of the biggest, if not the biggest issues, I think, facing these platforms. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, you can have, depending on what server you're on, if you have, maybe you have people who are really active in running it, you can think of it as like forum moderators who maybe are really strict about enforcing their rules and standards and kind of upholding mm-hmm. these community norms. But at the same time, there's no obligation for people to do that. So yeah. you can have, you know, all kinds of bad content or even illegal content in some cases appearing on these platforms. I think there are people really thinking about these problems, and I think there are some like interesting solutions that are being talked about that people have come up with. You know, you talked about Blue Sky. They have a kind of interesting approach to moderation where it's kind of right now it's some sort of central enforcement, but also leaving a lot up to users to kind of control what level of, you know, basically like content filtering they want to mm-hmm. see. And I think that's one of the things that's probably going to take Meta a while, is that, you know, they're going to have to figure out how to make sure that, you know, even though they are compatible with ActivityPub, you know, they don't want, you know, anyone to post anything on the Fediverse somewhere to be able to just like put something on, get something onto Threads that would go against their community standards.
Well, so that's the thing, right? Yeah, totally. Because, you know, Threads, they follow under like Facebook/Meta's guidelines, and they're very famously, they don't allow certain not safe for work images, for example, whereas like on other Mastodon servers, that's fine. You can do whatever you want, say whatever you want, you know? So it's a different, it's a kind of an unusual or strange, I know, it's kind of an awkward thing where like one server has different standards than another server, even though they're the same universe or what you want to call it, you know? But yeah, I think, you know, for example, like there was this whole thing recently on how I think Mastodon got criticized for having CSAM images, you know, child sexual abuse images, and one of the reasons I've heard is because this particular server is just like one guy running it, so it's literally like one guy doing most of the moderation, and he just couldn't, you know, he didn't have the power to like catch it, or at least that's what I'm getting from this particular article, and you know. Like you mentioned, it's hard because moderation, it's either you pay for the moderation or you rely on volunteers, and volunteers don't have the man hours, you don't have the people power to like do everything, cover everything. And in that sense, you would have to rely on, what's the technology called? Photo, what they scan photos.
DNA.
And then, yeah, photo DNA. That's right. And then so like they would have to use that to sort of like implement it into the structure essentially, or into the code base, I guess. And have that sort of suss out those accounts and just ban them or ban the offending server or whatever it is. But, you know, you mentioned Blue Sky. Blue Sky is the other one. But they use even though they also kind of follow the same Fediverse principle, but they use a completely different protocol. Is that correct?
Yeah. So Blue Sky is decentralized as well, and mm-hmm. they use a different protocol. It's called the AT protocol. And the creators say that the plan is eventually that they'll federate so that people will be able to host other instances, you know, of Blue Sky and kind of have this federation model. But right now it is just kind of one sort of centrally control place that looks a lot like Twitter. But the vision is that it will be more kind of like what we think of as like the Fediverse.
But it's not, is it compatible with ActivityPub?
So that's an interesting question. The two the protocols are you know, there's various like factions if you want to like go deep into like the forums of people arguing about like protocol supremacy. I think my sense is that eventually there will be some connections between them. Like there's already a few people kind of working on these sort of like bridges. Mm-hmm. Between, there's one called Skybridge, I believe, that,
oh gosh,
you know, will sort of make Blue Sky posts available within the broader Fediverse. So, like, I suspect mm-hmm. if Blue Sky kind of keeps growing and becomes bigger, we'll see sort of ways that they can like interact with each other, but they are technically mm-hmm. separate protocols. You know, the main difference that the Blue Sky developers talk about is that they think account portability is a little bit easier with the way that they've set things up. You know, there's a few other like structural differences and lots of other stuff that's like way more in the weeds that's beyond my technical abilities to understand.
So I think, so just in case we were a little too fast for you, for our listeners, I think that Mastodon is made up of all these different servers. And in order to join a Mastodon, you have to like pick your server, you know, Mastodon.social, whatever it is, and then you will sign up using the Mastodon interface. With Threads, you can just like, it's an app that you download and then it'll immediately hook up to your existing Instagram account if you have one. And it would port all your friends and followers over from that. With Blue Sky, right now it's invitation only, so you need to have you need to know someone or whatever it is to give you an invitation code. And Blue Sky also, like, correct me if I'm wrong, but Blue Sky was it initially like a project inside Twitter or something that got just like branched off into its own thing? And I believe one of the initial like funders was Jack Dorsey. At least that's how I first heard of Blue Sky.
Yeah, it started off as a project internally within Twitter, while Jack Dorsey was CEO, to kind of create a decentralized version of Twitter that could exist without Twitter, the company. Mm-hmm. That quickly grew, and they kind of spun it off into its own company. It's now led by Jay Graber, who's CEO, and mm-hmm. I think it has maybe a dozen employees or something. Mm-hmm. And they were still kind of linked, had some ties to Twitter, but all that kind of got severed when Elon Musk bought the company. Mm-hmm. So they're now independent. Jack Dorsey was, you know, a big backer of it. He, gave them a lot of funding. I think what's interesting now is he's become, at least publicly, he's been backing more of another decentralized platform called Nostr. I don't know if I'm saying that correctly. He's been a little bit critical of some of the decisions of Blue Sky, but that's Jack Dorsey for you, I guess.
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Stripe Tap to Pay on iPhone came along and changed everything. With Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. No more juggling different methods. Just a simple tap on my iPhone and transactions are complete. What's truly remarkable is how Stripe caters to all my customers' preferences. Whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets, Stripe ensures a smooth checkout experience every time. Setting up Stripe was a breeze, taking just minutes to get up and running. From local markets to global retailers, Stripe helped me expand my reach and grow my business with ease. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.
The Claude 3 model family from Anthropic is your one-stop shop for enterprise AI. With models at every point on the price-performance curve, you no longer have to make trade-offs between intelligence, speed, and cost. Claude 3 Opus sets new industry benchmarks for intelligence. Sonnet strikes the perfect balance between skills and speed. And Haiku is the fastest and lowest cost model in the market, perfectly designed for high volume, high speed use cases. Join the thousands of enterprises who trust Anthropic to keep them at the frontier. Visit anthropic.com/Claude today.
For a while, I want to say for a hot minute this year, Blue Sky was the talk of the town. Like it was, at least it seemed to me, to be fair, I think also it depends on the, I think a lot of that is because a lot of the initial Blue Sky users are New York media people, and they got, it got written up a lot in New York media circles, and that's how we hear a lot about these things. And I think that's why for a while Blue Sky was like the Twitter alternative for a while, and because you need an invitation to get in, it seemed like very exclusive, etc., etc. And I think part of the charm of Blue Sky, at least initially, was that the developers and the CEO, as you mentioned, they were very like communicative with the community. It seemed like a really interesting, even though it is a federated thing, it seemed at least tight-knit-ish in a way. As tight as it can possibly get, I suppose. But now I think as more and more people are on Blue Sky, there have been some moderation issues. You mentioned moderation issues. Some moderation issues have propped up. The most recent one I can think of is there was a user on Blue Sky that had a racial slur in their username, and it got called out. There was this whole kerfuffle around it, and even though the user did eventually get, you know, banned and all that stuff, the Blue Sky didn't respond to it for like I think 10 days or something, I can't remember exactly, and it kind of blew up in Blue Sky's face. And and then they had this, there was this article on, I want to say Fortune or Forbes, I can't remember exactly, but, and they interviewed the CEO and how she was like, you know, as the company is growing, we can't be as close as we used to be. We can't, you know, have this one-on-one community building things that we used to. What do you think of all that? And what do you think of Blue Sky in general? Like how it sort of evolved into what it is now, which is like a strange, it's Twitter-like, but also not, in a way.
Yeah, I was joking the other day that Blue Sky sort of feels like it's in its hall monitor phase, where it feels like there's a lot of people who have a lot of very strong opinions about what they should and shouldn't be doing and are kind of whipping up a lot of this stuff. I should also say that like I have the privilege and benefit that I've never faced harassment on Blue Sky. You know, I've encountered plenty of not safe for work stuff, but nothing that's been really kind of ugly or, you know, directed at me in that way. So, like, I don't want to discount the feelings that, like, see these things. So, like, it is a serious problem. My impression is that I think a lot of people came to Blue Sky with this idea that, like, it was going to be kind of, you know, like Twitter, but better. They were going to be able to learn from Twitter's mistakes. They really cared about community and, you know, making sure that it was a good place and, you know, wasn't going to have Nazis and all these kind of issues that we associate with Twitter. And I think that, you know, right now they're suffering the same thing that a lot of platforms that grow really get really big really fast before they're ready kind of go through, which like inevitably there's going to be issues. The thing with the username was a big problem because, you know, people were saying why, you know, that's such a simple, like easiest, lowest hanging fruit you can imagine is like have a block list of words that can't be in usernames, right? And maybe you would include you know, racial slurs in that list. They didn't do that. People thought it took too long to fix, too long for them to kind of explicitly address why that happened. So, you know, and I think all those points are valid. I don't know if it's necessarily fair to interpret that as saying these people don't care about safety, they don't care about community, they don't care about any of those issues. I think if you look at what everybody involved with this has said, I think they do care. I'm not saying they obviously have made mistakes. Everyone does. But,
yeah,
you know, I think people should also remember that, like, a lot of these, you know, they did make some obvious mistakes, but there's also a lot of hard problems when it comes to how you build a community, how you enforce moderation, where you draw these lines. You know, even the biggest and, like, most well-funded companies get this stuff wrong a lot.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's also, like, how old, like, this is a brand new thing. It hasn't been around barely 6 months or something. It's a very young team in general.
And it's a closed beta.
It's a closed beta, exactly. I mean, I don't really know how many users they have right now, but it's very, you know, limited.
Yeah,
there aren't that many people on it.
I think it might be a little over 400,000 at this point.
Yeah.
I forget exactly where they're at, but it's, you know, it's very small. And I think you could make an argument that, like, you know, in a closed beta, you know, you're sort of accepting that there's going to be some hiccups. Some issues. I think it's fair for the community to push back and say, like,
yeah,
we want this to be a better place. We don't want you guys to make the same mistakes. We want you to care about trust and safety. We want you to, like, really invest in these problems and not make them kind of, like, secondary concerns. I think that's all really valid. You know, it can really help kind of shape the tone of the community, but, you know, I think there's also kind of a contingent of if people on Blue Sky that are very visible and very loud about, you know, kind of trying to create their own kinds of norms that go beyond that, you know, are, like I said, just kind of made it feel very, like, hall monitory at some point to me. Because, like, when I first joined Blue Sky, it was, like, everyone was posting, like, pictures of, like, Alf and the naked Alf jokes. I don't know if you were around for those memes. And it was like, oh, this is, like, very, like, campy and fun. And then, like, now it's, like, there was this sort of, like, the main character or one of the main characters of Blue Sky yesterday was somebody posted, a cute photo of, like, a fluffy dog looking out a window and said, you know, this dog protected us from a trespassing bunny. You know,
all right, I know.
And then
about
somebody
this,
was like, "Oh, you're, like, co-opting the language of, by saying trespassing, you're, like, co-opting the language of law enforcement." And there was, like, all this, like, really weird criticism. So I'm strange. Like, man, people, you gotta. Like, this is the internet.
I have to say, and we can talk about the differences between these three. These three really do seem to be the main alternatives at this point. Mastodon, Blue Sky, to a certain extent, and Threads obviously the big behemoth and the big elephant in the room is Threads. So Threads has over, like, a billion users. Was it, like, a billion users or something? I think Threads has.
It's like not quite a billion yet. They had they got to 100 million.
100 million, sorry.
Very quickly. They're I mean, Mark Zuckerberg said he thinks that, you know, it can be the next kind of billion user app under Meta's, you know, family of app umbrella. We'll see. They had a lot of that engagement kind of fell off just as quickly as they got it. So
I mean, well, I mean, the reason it got picked up was because it's so tied to Instagram. It's like you can just click a button and it'll just port all of your friends and stuff over. That's probably why it got picked up so quickly. Of course, when it first launched, it was like, there was only the For You. It was all algorithm all the time. You couldn't have a following only feed. Well, now you can. Now there is a For You algorithm fueled stream versus a following, which is just the people you follow thing. It's very similar to TikTok in the sense of For You / following. I'm sure that comparison has been made already with TikTok. But it's, and of course the other thing, for at least for me anyway, the thing that stops me from really using Threads is because there is no desktop version. It's mobile only. And that's the number one reason why I haven't really used it that much. But I'm sure they'll get there eventually. It also seems to me anyway, this is just purely anecdotal, my personal experience of all these three platforms. Threads is probably the most mainstream. Mastodon seems to be, at least from what I follow, like, very like tech nerds, early tech adopters, kind of crowd with some like local Bay Area influences because I know I'm in the Bay Area. Blue Sky seems to be like I said, that New York media crowd ish. Some occasional shit posters, some internet sort of celebrity type people on Blue Sky. And it's like almost three, it's almost as if there's three different crowds, and I'm sat here like checking all three all the time. And like my brain is like social media all the time because it's literally three different apps and I'm being divided all the time. And it's because I am not like one person. Like I have different interests, you know? And I don't know, like I feel like I'm personally drawn to Blue Sky because I love the interface more than the other ones. But that's now, that's for now anyway. My opinion could change tomorrow. What do you like from your personal usage of these three apps and perhaps even more Twitter alternatives to come, like where do you see this going? It seems as if Threads is the giant behemoth like in the room. I'm not sure what could beat Threads at this point, but where do you stand right now? What do you prefer of the three, if any? And which do you think like is gonna win out if we want to win out, if at all?
I mean, it's hard. I think on one hand, you know, what we're seeing, particularly with Blue Sky and Threads with all the hype, is that there really is this intense desire from a lot of people for something else to be Twitter.
Yeah.
And to have, you know, some kind of viable alternative. But I think with both, we're seeing like how difficult that is, even with kind of sort of the best versions that exist out there, that it's so hard to recreate that. I think Blue Sky, like you said, it really kind of, because of the invite structure, they've really benefited from kind of having a lot of high profile, really online people, you know, a lot of posters, people you know, you know, who tweet a lot. You know, Blue Sky was sort of appealing for them You know, for me, one thing that's been nice was that I joined before Twitter killed its API. So I was able to somewhat successfully rebuild parts of my following graph because there were tools where I could kind of find people I followed from Twitter on Blue Sky. It's not perfect, but, you know, because of that, I've had some success. And, you know, I find that I actually get, in a lot of cases, more engagement on Blue Sky than I do on Twitter now. Which is crazy because I think on Blue Sky I have a few hundred followers and on Twitter I have 15,000. On the other hand, Threads is attached to my Instagram, which I mostly just use for personal use. That's something I was thinking about today. Like I've had a really hard time kind of rebuilding my following graph. You know, I'm like desperately, like I've been like searching through other people's profiles to see who they're following, trying to like just build up my feed, because right now it just feels weirdly empty. Like, and the recommendations that Threads keeps giving me are like for like random celebrities and like the zoo and, you know, accounts that like might be interesting to me on Instagram. Like maybe I'd follow them on Instagram, but like I don't want to use Threads that way.
Yeah, I think that was my initial negative reaction to Threads was because all of the accounts that they recommended in their algorithm feed are like Instagram accounts, you know, like it's very, very, very image heavy, very photo heavy, very influencer heavy, I guess, in a celebrity heavy. And like, that's not really what I want to read. You know, I use Twitter as like kind of a news feed sometimes, or like, you know, funny, humorous stuff that people talk about. And that's not the same people. That Venn diagram isn't quite there, you know. I mean, I don't know. It's a different crowd. It's a different kind of people that you follow over, you know, Instagram versus Twitter.
Yeah, and I can't tell if like those people are on Threads, and I just can't find them, or if like the only people posting on Threads are like meme accounts and, you know. People that like had exclusively people who had very large Instagram followings. Like I think it's a bit of both maybe. But yeah, it's just because there's like not they don't have good search. Their recommendations are not amazing. It's just like so hard to find them.
Yeah. All right, I'm gonna try to wrap this up, and then we can go on to the other segments if we want to. But like, first of all, over under on whether Twitter/X survives the year. Do you think it's gonna like Musk will drag it out even more, or do you think he's gonna give up at some point?
The year, yeah, I think they survive the year.
Yeah,
5 years, I don't know.
But, right, the year versus 5 years. Okay. Yeah, and which do you think, like, you mentioned in the rundown, you mentioned like apparently TikTok might be a Twitter alternative too at some point.
They just came out with like text posts. I don't think TikTok really has much to worry about in terms of, you know, their user base. I don't think they need to be Twitter, but
yeah.
I think what we're seeing is like a lot of companies, like they're seeing like Twitter's weakness right now, and they're like, well, let's just have some kind of Twitter like feature, like just in case, right? Like Substack has its own thing. TikTok has text posts. I mean, we've seen this many other companies. So I think like a lot of people are just trying it because they're like, why not? I don't think TikTok is the one who's keeping Musk up at night.
Right. All right. So, I mean, that's a fascinating discussion. I'm sure we could talk about it forever. But let's move on to a couple other segments. This is just a fun thing since it's an online show. Talk about things that are happening online, things that are going viral. This is just one thing that I picked up today, and that's it. There was this thing that happened on TikTok. I want to say it's been a month or so now. There was this video going around about this lady in Italy that just went around pointing at people, pointing out pickpockets, and she was like, "Attenzione, pickpocket!" And she would literally like point out pickpocketers as it was happening, and this blew up, and she became like this internet celebrity. People loved that she was pointing out pickpockets. Of course, and then the New York Times wrote a whole profile on this lady too, very like glowing profile on this lady. But of course, it turns out you know, nobody's as they seem. And the woman, Monica Pawley, she is like a city councilor for a very far-right political party, who is like very, very far-right. They're very like anti-LGBT, like they're very far-right. And it also seems like the people that she targeted in those pickpocket videos were Romani. So it's kind of racist as well. So all these things, like, for example, like in the New York Times article, they're like, how do you know they're pickpockets? And she's like, oh, I just know. And then there's this whole like racial profiling, like subtext. So yeah, that doesn't seem to be very good.
But is there a better example of milkshake duck? I mean, this is like, this is the most kind of milkshake duck scenario I can think of. That was all I could think about when I read the stories about how she's actually like, you know, a far right politician who, you know, has some troubling history.
totally milkshake duck. I was like, oh no, this one lady that we thought was a good person is maybe not so much. And you also entered this thing in the rundown about the Pinky Dot NPC thing. Do you want to talk about a little about that?
Yeah, sure. So there's this trend on TikTok of these live streamers who are doing these NPC live streams, which stands for non-player characters. There's this one woman in particular who goes by Pinky Doll, who has gained a pretty big following. And if you watch the streams, they're hard to describe. You have to check it out. You know, but she kind of just sits in her house in one position, and she just sort of like says the same things kind of over and over again. And she responds, people are sending her little, you know, tips and in-app gifts. And then she kind of will say like, ice cream, yum, yum. And all these like, and like this kind of weird robot voice. And it's like so strange. And she streams, you know, for quite a long time, and people like mesmerized by it. Apparently Timbaland, the rapper, is like a big fan.
Oh my goodness.
Has sent her a lot of gifts. And people are kind of it kind of became this weird, like, panic in a way where people were saying, I can't believe people will watch this stuff. It's so weird. Everyone's, like, brains are so broken. But I just think it's a really interesting trend of, like, it's not hurting anyone. There's nothing wrong with it. It's just, like, a weird thing that, for whatever reason, is, like, people find enjoyable. And, you know, I think if you watch, I've watched some of these streams now, and I think it's just sort of, like, the actual, like, repetitiveness and then, like, seeing her kind of, like, respond to everyone in real time. Like, it's not my thing, but I also kind of get why you kind of get hooked on it, and it's a little bit addictive. Like, almost like, you know, those ASMR videos where people kind of watch, like, just people, like, cutting things or, like, speaking in whispers.
Yeah. The surprising thing is that they get paid a decent amount, like $6,000 or something like that per... I don't know, per something, but they get paid a decent amount just to, like,
yeah, she's be like an NPC. I mean, she's making more money than either of us by yeah, definitely. Doing her Pinky Doll stream. So
yeah, totally. We're almost at an hour, so we have to wrap it up soon. But Carissa, thank you so much for joining me on this inaugural podcast about things online, and we spent a lot of it talking about Twitter. But you know, they've sucked up much of our lives, so that makes sense. Carissa, where can we catch you online?
Yeah, so I am still on Twitter at Carissa B. I'm on Blue Sky. I'm on Mastodon. I'm on most of the Twitter alternatives. You can also read my work at Engadget. I'm working on a story now about decentralized social media that kind of touches on some of what we talked about.
Very cool. Hey, that's it for us. If you liked listening to this show, definitely let us know. Feedbacks@dailytechnewsshow.com, or you can email me, NicoleLead@gmail.com, and let us know what you think.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.